Episode lucky number 13 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast, brought to you by the notion that we might actually have real sponsors soon.
Welcome to the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Here's radio host and lifelong Yankees fan, Ralphie Aversa.
Yeah, how about that? Episode number 13 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. We have made it 13 weeks. My name is Ralphie Aversa, radio host, lifelong Yankees fan. I'm at Ralphie Aversa on pretty much every social network. And of course, we are at Pinstripe Lanes over at pinstripelanes.com. And a bit of news on a couple new platforms this week. This is our first new episode airing on TuneIn. A big thanks to TuneIn for approving us. And also, and this was a mistake on our part, because we use the Blueberry, right? Yeah, because it's just Blueberry without the E's. We use the Blueberry plugin to on WordPress to push out the podcast every week. We weren't actually on Blueberry's platform, though. We have since changed that since our critically acclaimed episode last week with the Yes Network's Jack Curry. If you haven't checked that out, a must listen. And thank you for all the great feedback on that as well. A special shout out to my buddy Rob V, who sent me a very nice note about that podcast and about this series that we're doing. And it starts to gain traction. We're actually seeing a little bit of an increase in numbers as well. So we appreciate you rating, reviewing, subscribing, and of course, checking out the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. All right, a couple things. I don't want to go too long on the opening segment because we received another great spot this week. Somebody who is super generous with their time. I will tell you who that is in a second. However, I will start with this. I have found, finally, one silver lining in Players Weekend. And for those who don't know, Players Weekend is now this annual event where all of the teams in Major League Baseball have to wear these dopey, slow-pitch softball-looking uniforms. The silver lining in this for the Yankees is that at least this year, they're not at home. They are not throwing away the treasured, tried-and-true pinstripes for these awful pullover uniforms with stupid nicknames on the back. At least they're away. Now, I will have to witness these in person. They'll be in Baltimore, and I will be down at Camden for the games next weekend. But nonetheless, not at Yankee Stadium, at least. I still think the uniforms, the whole thing is stupid. I don't get it. However, there's a tie-in to that and this week's guest, in that, believe it or not, a Yankee uniform from last year, Players Weekend, is now sitting where else? Cooperstown, New York. That's right, the Baseball Hall of Fame. Our guest this week, talking all things Hall of Fame as we get ready for possibly some big induction weekends. 2019 with Mariano Rivera being eligible, 2020 with the captain Derek Jeter. He's the Vice President of Communications and Education for the Baseball Hall of Fame. He is John Szczytowski, and he's our guest on episode number 13 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. And welcome back to episode lucky number 13 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Of course, you can find us at pinstripelanespodcast.com, at Pinstripe Lanes on social media. And in addition to Apple and iTunes and Google Play, we're now on TuneIn and Blueberry, in addition to Stitcher as well. So a lot of places, pretty much anywhere you find podcasts, you can find us. All right, so this weekend at the stadium, the Yankees will honor arguably the greatest team in the history of baseball, the 98 Yankees team, a team that won 114 regular season games en route to really just bulldozing through the postseason, sweeping the Padres, and winning the 1998 World Series championship. On that team, of course, the skipper is a Hall of Famer, Joe Torre. However, in the next 2 years, Yankee fans may see two first ballot Hall of Famers from that team. Mariano Rivera is up for induction next year, and then, of course, the following year, Derek Jeter. So, if you've never been to Cooperstown, or you're like me and it's been a very long time since you've been to Cooperstown, I figured it'd be great if we chatted with the VP of Communications and Education for the Hall of Fame, John Szczytowski. He's been in this role for 2 years, and prior to that, he served as the manager of media relations and baseball information for the Boston Red Sox. John, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Thanks for the time.
Ralphie, thank you so much for having me. Hopefully people aren't turning off their podcasts after you said I was coming from the Red Sox. I promise even-handed discussion here.
I like it. And I appreciate the time, and I think fans will appreciate the discourse. Let's start first. You know, we're just coming off of what seemingly was a very successful induction weekend. You had the second largest crowd in the history of Cooperstown for the induction ceremony. And of course, Mother Nature even cooperated, which is something we haven't been able to say too often this baseball season. How did things go from your perspective?
Wow, it was an absolutely magical weekend in Cooperstown. We had six electees and six former players giving speeches for the first time since all the way back in the 50s. So that in and of itself was really special, and we had a fantastic ceremony. These guys all resonated with their fans so much that you just knew that it was going to be a special weekend between Trevor Hoffman, Vlad Guerrero, Chipper Jones, Jim Thome, Jack Morris, Alan Trammell. It was just a really special group, and we had actually 57 Hall of Famers in total up in Cooperstown, which is our highest total ever for an induction weekend. And as you mentioned, our second highest visitorship for the actual ceremony at 53,000, which, you know, when you think about it, it's larger than most every ballpark. And also, you're talking about a little village of Cooperstown that is basically just 1,600 permanent residents. So 1,600 turning into 53,000 is really remarkable. And the weather was great. It was just another magical weekend.
When you break it down, that's fascinating how many permanent residents are in Cooperstown compared to how many people came in for the induction ceremony this past year. And I think certainly that catches the ear of a Yankees fan that is thinking about maybe going up next year if Mariano is in fact a first ballot, and then the year after with, of course, Derek Jeter. From your perspective, when does the planning for 2019 begin?
Our internal planning has already begun. And as soon as the induction ceremony ended last year, we start turning towards 2019, and we're looking at 2020, expecting a large visitor base coming up to that one. But really, I would recommend anyone looking to be here for induction weekend, really commit to it and get a jump on your plans, because, you know, it is a small town. There are plenty of lodging options here, but it does fill up very, very quickly. And if you wait until the day before, the week before, even the month before, you might get stuck staying over somewhere that's just a little further away. So it can always work, and I never want to say you can't find a place to stay, because there are plenty of options, you know, on your way between the city, let's say, and Cooperstown. But just keep in mind, the sooner the better, and then you don't have anything to worry about.
John Shestakovsky, he is the Vice President of Communications and Education for the Baseball Hall of Fame in beautiful Cooperstown, New York. He's our guest this week here on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Do you have, and again, you know, I will say the one thing that's, I feel that's a little tough about our conversation is that we do have to speak in hypotheticals, because at the end of the day, we don't know if Mariano's going to be a first balloter until the ballots are cast. I mean, obviously one can assume, and same for Derek the year after, but the largest crowd, I believe, was when Tony Gwynn and Cal Ripken Jr. were inducted, and that was north of 80,000 people. You mentioned north of 53,000 for this past induction ceremony. Are you guys estimating numbers yet for 19 and 20 or now?
I wouldn't say we're really estimating specific numbers. We're certainly looking at a large number. What really helps for these next 2 years in terms of crowd sizes is that there's the convenience factor of folks who can make the trip and drive. And obviously Cooperstown is sometimes harder when you're doing a cross-country flight, but the drive in from New York City or a local tri-state area is a lot easier. So whether it's a day trip or one night or two nights, we are expecting to see a bit of an influx, you know, should, as you said, in hypothetical format, should Rivera and Jeter be a part of those two upcoming classes. So I don't think anyone's really putting a number figure on it, but we're just kind of preparing ourselves for something in that larger area. As you mentioned, our largest crowd to date was for the induction of Tony Gwynn and Cal Ripken Jr., and that was up at upwards 85,000 people for that induction ceremony. So it could top that, but again, don't really know exactly what we're expecting. As things move along, we have a few metrics in place that give us a basic idea of what we might expect, but at this point, it's still a little too early.
You mentioned at least one method of travel if you're coming from the tri-state area, if you're coming from New York City, and that, of course, is driving. Is that, I mean, it's tough with Cooperstown and its location, and I don't think train is practical either. So is driving really your best bet?
Well, driving is definitely a great option. Train is actually possible. If you're coming from the city, you can get an easy train to Albany and then rent a car or find some alternate transportation from Albany up to Cooperstown. That might not be so difficult during induction weekend. And that's actually a pretty nice trip. I've taken it many times. And the drive portion, especially from Albany to Cooperstown, is actually quite enjoyable. Talking about some really beautiful areas, especially in the middle of the summer, green grass and flowers and nature. As a guy who came from Boston, it's really a pleasure. Every time I make a drive, you know, to or from Albany, or just, you know, an hour or so outside of Cooperstown, I still, a day doesn't go by where I don't say, wow, I'm so lucky to live in such a beautiful place. Cooperstown is just absolutely gorgeous, and it's a lot of fun getting here.
How, if at all, have Uber, which of course was implemented throughout New York State last summer, and Airbnb, how have those two services kind of affected the visitorship and the, I guess, foot traffic in and out of Cooperstown and the Baseball Hall of Fame?
The Uber and Lyft has definitely changed things a little bit. You know, we started to see it just this past spring, I believe, Uber opened up in upstate New York, so in this area. So it's really been recent, and I wouldn't go out and say we have as many drivers as New York City or that anything like that is possible. But we did have quite a few more drivers, you know, during induction weekend than we normally would. But, you know, the good thing is that when you're here in Cooperstown, everything's really walking distance. We have, you know, parking in town is a little hard to come by sometimes, but we have a great system of parking lots outside of town tied into a trolley system. So it's really easy to whether you're coming from straight from the city or coming from your house or coming from a hotel, you know, an hour away, to just park in one of our trolley lots and take the trolley onto Main Street. Once you get to Main Street, it's not that big, but there's plenty to do. All the restaurants, all the sports memorabilia shops, the Hall of Fame. We have two other wonderful museums in town, a farmer's museum and an art museum. We've got a lake that's right on, you know, right near Main Street. So once you get to town, it's pretty easy. And then on Sunday, we also have shuttles that take fans from Main Street to the induction site, which is just about a mile away in an area that can hold the larger gathering. So don't get scared away by the lack of an Uber availability right inside Cooperstown, because it's just so easy to get from point A to point B once you get here.
Get there for the induction ceremony. There's the ceremony itself. Obviously, you want to take a tour of the Hall of Fame. Are there any other things that have to be on the itinerary, any must-sees or must-dos while you're in Cooperstown for an induction ceremony?
The two big events of the weekend are the induction ceremony on Sunday, and that's where the players who are inducted give their speeches and are honored. The day before, on Saturday, is when we honor our award winners, and usually we have a couple of award winners. A broadcaster wins an award called the Frick Award, and the Spink Award is given to a longtime baseball writer. So last year, for example, or this past summer, we honored Sheldon Ocker, a longtime Cleveland Indians beat writer, and Bob Costas as the broadcaster. broadcaster. Following that event, which takes place at historic Doubleday Field right down the street from the Hall of Fame, there's actually a parade. And this is something not everyone knows about, but every Hall of Famer who's in town goes down the street in a pickup truck. And it's just a really, really cool opportunity to see these Hall of Famers up close and personal. It goes from the oldest class of Hall of Famers, and the parade ends with the newest. So this past year, you know, the Chipper Jones and the Jim Tomies coming through at the end. It's about an hour long, and it's just a really neat and special celebration of baseball, a chance to cheer for, you know, these legends up close and personal on Saturday evening.
All right, tickets for the induction ceremony. You need a ticket, right? How do you get them?
The induction ceremony is actually free and open to the public without a ticket. There's plenty of room. We do have some seating set up for, you know, VIPs, mostly guests of the new electees. We also have, seating available for certain levels of museum membership. So, if you're interested, check out, baseballhall.org and look at, the membership tiers. There are some that, allow access to, seats during the induction ceremony, but really you don't have to be a member any way, shape, or form to come to the induction ceremony. You know, stake your land on the lawn, bring a chair, bring a cooler, and enjoy the afternoon. It's a really special place, and yeah, no ticket necessary, but show up early if you want to get as close as possible.
John Shestakovsky, he's the Vice President of Communications and Education for the Baseball Hall of Fame, with us this week, giving us a lot of very useful information if you're thinking about maybe making the trek up to Cooperstown for either next year or the year after, as I'm sure many Yankees fans are already thinking about. I'm sure it's on the radar. John, let's talk about what's happening at the Hall of Fame right now, because it's cool to scroll through your Twitter, and you guys obviously throughout the season are collecting a number of different pieces of memorabilia and other artifacts. You know, you're just coming off of induction weekend, and you're getting so many things throughout the season, but do you remember anything you've gotten from anything Yankee related this year so far?
I don't know that we have a Yankees piece so far this year. I'm going to have to rack my brain before a conversation ends, but I can tell you a couple things I remember receiving in the last couple of years since I came over to the Hall of Fame. The Yankees, of course, have been such an exciting team the last couple of years. It's, you know, as a kid who grew up as a Red Sox fan, it's kind of hard to say. Now being in Cooperstown, I have to admit I've become a fan of every team, but last year we received jersey from Aaron Judge when he hit a home run in September, of course, en route to the rookie home run record that he set. We also received a jersey from that first players weekend from Kraken, the Kraken jersey that Sanchez
from,
wore.
Gary Sanchez, yep.
Exactly. So it's now in the Hall of Fame's collection, and telling us a number of stories. You know, it helps us document, you know, Sanchez and the great year he had last year, but also this new initiative from MLB, and relating to, you know, a younger audience. So that's pretty cool. You know, I know Stanton was not a member of the Yankees last year, but he did have an outstanding stretch. He hit home runs in, I think it was 8 straight games, or maybe 8 home runs in 6 games. So he donated the bat that he used during that stretch to the Hall of Fame, and that's up here. And actually, one of the coolest pieces that I remember collecting early on in my time here in Cooperstown was, I believe it was August of 2016, when Aaron Judge and Tyler Austin made their major league debuts the same day. I believe they hit back-to-back in the lineup.
They sure
did. They both hit home runs in their first at-bats, as I'm sure most of your audience knows, and both of their first at-bat bats are now on display here at the Hall of Fame. It was such a cool accomplishment, and of course, the start of something very special in the Bronx. So those are just a few cool artifacts that have come our way with thanks to the players and the Yankees and MLB over the last couple of years.
Oddest thing that you've seen in the Baseball Hall of Fame?
There are a number of odd pieces, you know, some of them are just a little strange. One of my favorite artifacts is It's a piece. It's like it's something that a player used. He was a good ball player, and he used this in the minor leagues after losing his hand to allow. It's a contraption that allows him to hold a bat and actually swing a bat. Just one of those cool, wacky things that you see here. Again, there's so many stories in Cooperstown. It's unbelievable. There's up on their second floor, there's a home plate made out of wood and nail together that was used at, you know, a Japanese internment camp in World War II. We have a bat that Babe Ruth used when he set the single season home run record. The most unbelievable thing about this bat is that he put a little notch around the trademark of the bat for every home run he hit using that piece of lumber. And if you can believe it, I think there's about 30 notches on that one bat. That means he hit half of his home runs that year with this one piece of lumber that's on display.
You mentioned, I noticed, John, that you were specific to give thanks to the players along with the Yankees and MLB, because obviously it's kind of, you know, you're partners with them and you got to kind of work with them to get a lot of this stuff to Cooperstown. And I know the Yankees also have their own museum now in Yankee Stadium where they display a number of different artifacts as well. So I guess from your perspective, especially coming from the Red Sox and working on the media side and now going to Cooperstown, what's it like, I guess, from your seat now working with the Yankees?
You know what? It's easy. It's great people, great players. You know, in my role now dealing with clubs and dealing with players, when I'm talking to them, it's all positive stuff. It's really amazing to hear the reactions. I'm asking, you know, if they want to be a part of the history that we have here in Cooperstown, be a part of the Hall of Fame's displays and collections, and really be preserved forever as part of the game's history. And I'm telling you, 99.9% of the time, a player says, yes, I want to share something. And, you know, there are times when, of course, we make it work with the club and if they're looking to collect something, if the player, of course, wants to keep something on his own. But luckily, there's plenty to go around, and almost every time we're able to work it out. And the players and the clubs are always super helpful in making sure that that Cooperstown has something, you know, as the rightful place of baseball, the home of baseball history and the spiritual home of our game.
It's something else too. I know, and I'm a big collector as well of memorabilia. I was, when I was a kid, a huge collector, and now I've kind of, part of it living in Manhattan, you don't have as much space, so you can't collect as much, but certainly I kind of focus
right
more now just on, you know, the Yankees and players I'm a fan of, teams I've watched, so on and so forth. I know a while ago, MLB implicated a new, it was at the time new, an authentication system for different in-game use stuff and autograph stuff with there was a hologram system in the whole nine. Do you guys still go through that as well when you take something from an MLB game today, or is there a completely separate process? How does that work?
No, that's a good question. We actually do follow through with the authentication system. In our mind, it really puts to bed any question about, you know, which piece is which. You know, of course, we never want, and I don't think this would happen now with this system, us to, you know, have a piece and then someone else think that they have the same piece. It's always important to make sure that we're all on the same page here. So we really think this is a great system that's in place, and we have great relationships with the MLB authentication team, and know that if we're on hand, how to kind of work with them and get our pieces authenticated. But right now on my desk, I have something that came in today, for example, the cap that Bartolo Colon wore just a few days ago when he set the all-time record for wins by a pitcher born in Latin America, and it comes to us with an authentication sticker. It's important. That way we know this is the correct piece. There wasn't any mistake or confusion about what exactly we were requesting and will be receiving. So it just kind of helps us tie up that loop, and it's been extremely helpful for us.
Wow. So it's authenticated on the field, in the stadium, and then basically securely transported to you guys.
Exactly. So I travel to All-Star Game, World Series, MLB Jewel events, and we may have a representative on hand for a major milestone that will be accomplished. But if it's something else that happens along the way, we usually work through the teams, whether it's PR contacts or some other contact with the team to put in a request and then work with them on receiving the artifacts as well, whether in person at some date or shipped securely.
John Shestakovsky, Vice President of Communications and Education, giving us a lot of time and a great spot here on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. He, of course, is with the Baseball Hall of Fame. All right, before you've answered every question I've wanted to know about Cooperstown and the Hall of Fame and then some, which has been fantastic. So let's just wrap with this. We started at the beginning. We mentioned a little bit of your background. You've been in baseball for a long time now, specifically spending parts of 10 seasons, including 9 postseasons with the Boston Red Sox. Now, I know you started in the Red Sox organization at their single-A affiliate, worked your way up from there. You're with the team in 2013. It's quite a year. You know, the Boston Marathon tragedy and then what the Red Sox end up going to do throughout that season. Was that maybe your toughest, most difficult season working in media relations for the Red Sox?
I don't know about toughest. There were certainly some difficult times early on in that season, but honestly, it was probably the most fulfilling to see the team come together, rally together after that tragedy and really want to do something special for the fans. And, you know, part of it was bringing, you know, was the first game back at Fenway Park a few days after the situation died down a little bit. But, you know, beyond, you know, going on to make the playoffs and kind of be underdogs and then win the World Series, there were little things that happened throughout the season, you know, victims of the bombing and people who lost family members or lost legs or limbs were coming through. And there was just such a willingness from all the ball players to be a part of the experience and try and lift people up, make their lives a little better. It was completely uplifting in every respect from the player standpoint and all the way through and after winning the World Series. It was a special season that I don't think will ever be replicated.
You know, I just realized I'm really glad I asked you that question because, and by the way, while I am a diehard Yankees fan, I love the game of baseball. And I've said it on this podcast before. Even in Yankees gear, while they're playing the Yankees, I like watching games at Fenway. I think it's a great ballpark. I wish the Yankees could have done what, you know, the Red Sox have done with their ballpark. Ours was, I think, falling apart a little worse. And there were, I think, a number of other factors, which, you know, I don't need to get into now, but nonetheless, I love going up to Fenway. I was there for the Jeter ceremony in 2014. You were still with the team then, right?
Indeed. Yeah, that was a really special, special day. And what a strange kind of thing to be celebrating a Yankees player at Fenway Park. But again, it was really special. I remember some of the Red Sox players talking about how much it meant to them to be involved in that game. And you know, one of our largest media sessions I remember ever taking place at Fenway Park took place after that game with Derek Jeter, and it had to be, you know, in a specific location that was, you know, maybe 4 or 5 times larger than the interview room that's usually in use to accommodate that amount of media. It was a major event, probably one of the biggest that ever took place at Fenway Park.
I will say, it not only, you know, the ceremony itself and watching Jeter be celebrated, to me that wasn't as odd, I think, just because of, I think there was just that, again, you have a lot of baseball fans in Boston that while they don't like the Yankees, they respect the game. And I think there was a level of respect with Derek, especially given the era that he played through and the manner that he went about his business. What was super odd to me, though, the oddest thing about being up there for that was going into Fenway and seeing them selling Derek Jeter retirement magazines, T-shirts, foam fingers. Like, I don't know if you caught, I would imagine at some point over that weekend you caught that as well. That had to be a little strange for you as well.
Yeah, it's definitely strange, but it really speaks to what, you know, what Jeter means to baseball. They're guys who play the game right. You know, we saw it with Chipper Jones and Mets fans. There's kind of a playful respect that, you know, pops up, and it's fun to watch. And really, even as Red Sox fans, I think they felt like they were an important part of the Derek Jeter career, what was a historic career and a very special career. And, you know, there's no shame in enjoying the fact that you're a part of it.
John, we'll leave you on this because this was a question I wanted to ask you earlier. It's our final question. Again, thank you so much for the amount of time you've given us here. You mentioned the Players Weekend, Sanchez Kraken jersey that's in there, the whole appeal to millennials, and that's kind of been this ongoing conversation throughout baseball. How, if at all, does that affect your job in Cooperstown?
It's another great question. You know, there are, you hear some people saying that baseball is losing viewership or whatnot, but all signs in Cooperstown are very strong. We're having a great year of visitorship, and you know, when you come here, it's all baseball all the time. We have a tournament of it's like 12-year-olds. More than 100 teams come through every week during the summer. It's just so much love of the game, respect for the players, respect for what's going on the field, and we absolutely love it. We have a brand new theater space here. We got a new film. We had a new film made. It's like a 15-minute introduction to the Hall of Fame, and it's called Generations of the Game. What it does is it connects kind of different eras of Hall of Famers to one another, whether it's Ken Griffey Jr. and Willie Mays or Lou Gehrig and Cal Ripken Jr. And it's been really cool to see youngsters come to town, and maybe they know a little bit about the newer Hall of Famer, but they're connecting then with maybe the similar player from way back in the day. There's really a great love for the game that's out there, and if you love baseball and if you love the game's history or just you know, any particular players or teams right now, come to Cooperstown during induction weekend and you're going to feel like you are among your brethren. It's a really, really special experience. So I don't know if that really answers your question, but it's certainly baseball central here, and haven't seen any dips or lack of youth engagement in the game when it comes to Cooperstown.
You did answer my question, and it confirms what I and I think a lot of other baseball fans think as well, which is a lot of it's just media fodder and kind of blown out of proportion. And all you got to do is walk into a baseball stadium, I think, and you look at the wide variety of demographics, and you could see that for sure. Again, he's the Vice President of Communications and Education for the Baseball Hall of Fame, John Shestakovsky. Hey, John, again, thank you for all the time and for the info. And hopefully sooner rather than later, we'll see you up in Cooperstown.
Hey, I look forward to it, Ralphie. Let us know when you're heading up here.
Thank you again to John and everyone up in Cooperstown at the Baseball Hall of Fame. Craig as well, who we emailed as we were coordinating the interview. And wow, that was pretty awesome. Good stuff. I feel as much as I want to go next year for Mariano and certainly the year after that for Derek, I feel like before the craziness, I got to get up there. Like, I don't know if it'll happen this year. I got to get up there at some point, though, just to appreciate again. Last time I was there, it was with my parents and my sister. I was maybe 6-7 years old. I mean, it was the year that Reggie got inducted, because I remember his plaque being one of the new ones on display in the gallery and getting to see that and buying a program from that induction weekend. That was the one and only time I've ever been to Cooperstown and the Baseball Hall of Fame. Looking forward to getting back. Hey, thank you again for tuning in. Please, if you can, rate, review, subscribe wherever you get podcasts. We'll see you back here next week with the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Let's go, Yankees.